Today I'm speaking to Adam Sutcliffe, who is a French and German teacher from the Gordon Schools up in Huntly in Aberdeenshire, right at the top of Scotland. And he's been doing some really interesting work in relation to blogging and podcasting and digital video work in languages. And today what we're going to do is we're going to discuss the sorts of things he's been doing and any tips he's got for teachers who are interested in using these sorts of technologies in their classroom. So Adam, would you like to introduce yourself? Tell us a bit about your teaching background, the sort of school you work in, and how you're using technology in the classroom. That'd be great.
Okay. Well, I came into teaching quite late, actually. I was about nearly 40 now. I was quite late on. I went to university and spent 4 or 5 years messing around in France, not doing anything to do with teaching for a while, and then decided to become a teacher. I worked for 3 years in a secondary school in Barnsley, and then I went off to Cameroon and did 2 years with voluntary services overseas, teaching English as a foreign language over in a city called Marawa. And then I came back from Cameroon and ended up on the Isle of Yell in Shetland, which is even further north than I am at the moment, teaching in a very small junior high school, maximum class size of 10, I think it was. And I taught up in Shetland for 2 years, and for the last 3 years or so, I've been teaching in Huntly in the Gordon Schools. It's quite a large-sized secondary school. Take pupils from 11 all the way up to 18. It's probably about nearly 900 pupils on the roll. I teach French and German, mainly French. French is my speciality language, but I've ended up teaching some advanced higher, which is equivalent to second year A-level German. It's a very rural school. Probably about 70% of the pupils at the school come in by bus, which has meant this week we've had a very quiet week because the buses haven't been running due to the snow. So we've only had about 175 pupils in the last couple of days this week. It's a good school, really. It's a very, very good school. We've just come out of the inspection and there's a general good feeling about it. There's a whole very positive atmosphere and ethos within the school. Everybody, all the staff work for the betterment of the kids, and all the kids try to push themselves quite a lot as well. So it's a really good school to work in.
Excellent. And in the languages department, how many staff are there, and how do you promote languages at the Gordon Schools?
There's five of us on the staff at the moment. We all teach French and German, and then another colleague also teaches Spanish, which is offered in their fifth and sixth year, which is the equivalent of the sixth form down in England. We promote languages quite heavily at the school. We're lucky in the fact that our new head teacher and the previous head teacher were very supportive of us, and they supported us in the idea that languages shouldn't be dropped as an option subject, and that students at least up to 16 should have a language study somewhere within their curriculum. Every year we do a programme called Languages Work, which has been going on for about 4 or 5 years now, for which we actually won an award from SILT. That was about 2 or 3 years ago. We went down to London to get an award specifically for Languages Work. Basically, we promote the study of languages to students in S4, which is our equivalent of, I can't remember the English things now. It's basically GCSE.
Year 10. Year
10, year 11, yeah. So we promote language study to those students 1 year, and then the following year we'll promote language study to the primary kids that are coming up in the following session. So we're really quite active, and it bears fruit in the amount of students that we get studying languages at higher and advanced higher.
And what sort of links do you have with your primary school?
Quite good. I mean, there's a whole cluster of primary schools around and about that feed into us, but the main school is the Gordon Primary School, which is just next door to us, and we have pretty good links with them. Obviously, we're continually trying to improve those, you know, to identify what sort of level the students are on when they come up to us, to make the transition a little bit easier. And that's one of the focuses of, this year's development plan, and probably next year's as well, so it's ongoing.
And in the primary school the main primary school that feeds to the Gordon Schools, is the teaching of a modern foreign language done by the class teacher, or is there a specialist that comes in from the from your school?
No, we don't supply the specialist teachers. In one of the very, very small primary schools, one of my colleagues used to go in, but in Scotland we have a system called whereby languages have to now be taught in primary school from primary 6 to primary 7. And it's either class teachers who have undergone a course called MLPS, Modern Languages for Primary School Teachers, or there are visiting specialists who go into some schools.
Yeah, because primary languages in Scotland has been running for about 10 years, whereas in England we're only really the government has decided that by 2010 that all primary schools have to offer an entitlement to language learning, and so it's very interesting to see and to learn from our colleagues up north. That's great. Why did you actually teach in Scotland from the point of view that you're actually from Barnsley, just out of interest?
Well, I'm not actually from Barnsley, but from Oldham. I taught in
Oh,
Barnsley.
sorry. Right. Okay.
It sounds like I'm from Barnsley because I seem to pick up the accent when I was there. I don't know, actually. When I came back from Cameroon, I was looking for a job, and I came back just right at the end of August, so schools had started and they'd done all their employing. But then I just saw this advert in the Times Ed one day, and it said it was for this place called Midyell. I just loved the sound of it, and I applied for the job and got it. Just as simple as that, really.
And what was it like teaching up in Shetland?
Oh, it's fantastic. It was an amazing atmosphere in the school. It was a school, a junior high school, so it went basically from primary all the way up to S4, to year 10, year 11. There was only about 250 kids altogether, but they all mixed in all together, primary school kids, secondary school kids, all mixed together. As I said before, small, small class sizes. My biggest class was 10 or 12 or something like that, which was actually amazing. You could get so much done. You got an awful lot of work done. It was just such a fantastic supportive atmosphere as well.
No, it sounds very, very interesting experience. Now, at the Gordon Schools, let's talk a bit about the technology that you're using and also the sort of tech that you've actually got at the school.
In the school itself, we actually run on two networks, a newer network which operates with Windows XP, but our department is not on that sort of loop. All the computers that we have in our department run on Windows 98, which means anything with any sort of modernity is pretty much impossible to run. We have one interactive whiteboard, which is based in one classroom. We don't even have a projector that's fixed into the ceiling. It's just a projector that's plugged onto a table. And the fact that the whiteboard is connected to a computer that's running Windows 98 means an awful lot of things that we'd like to use we can't use. Because, for example, any program, any application that's running with Macromedia Flash or something like that, it doesn't work because it's not loaded onto the server. So things, some sort of the more fun interactive games, like you find on Zoot or trying to think of other websites, we can't use them. So it kind of negates any use of some of the more interesting uses of the whiteboard. But particularly myself, I've been working a lot with an Apple laptop recently to produce podcasts and such like just to make things a little bit more interesting.
No, definitely. I was just going to move on to that. Now, you've been blogging and podcasting for about a year now, is that right?
It all started at a conference organised by Scottish Silk, which held down at Stirling University, and it was called Communicator 6. And it was a conference aimed at showing almost a select group of teachers who'd expressed an interest from all over Scotland what are the possibilities of using what's being termed Web 2 technology within the classroom. Not just web technology, actually, just general technology. But it was for once, it was a really, really good conference because it was very hands-on, and things were being showed to us by teachers who have not sort of left the teaching profession and have got something to promote, but they were actual teachers working with things in at the time whilst they were still holding down a full timetable and things like that, and they just came in and showed us what was possible. For example, there was Mark Pendleton, who runs Partners in Excellence. I think it's in Perthshire or something like that.
Ayrshire.
Ayrshire, yeah. And he was doing a session on filmmaking, which I'd been getting an interest in anyway. And then there was John, he runs Radio Sandig.
John Johnson.
That's it. He did a session with Ewan on podcasting, Ewan McIntosh on podcasting, which I think got quite a lot of people enthused because they just basically showed us how quickly and easily it was to make an audio recording and post it onto the website, for students' work or a teaching resource that you've done or something like that. It just within 5 minutes you can do it.
And then what did you do after you've been to Communicator 6? How did you get started with using blogs and podcasts in your school?
Well, Ewan had set up via the Modern Foreign Languages Environment. He set up a blog which all modern language teachers in Scotland could do, and I just basically set one up. At first, I set one up just to sort of promote the work of the Gordon Schools Modern Languages Department. I've not really done a right lot of them recently. I've been concentrating on other ones, and then I just thought it was mainly over summer, during the summer holidays, I was thinking, what can I do with this idea? From there, the idea came to me. We have vocabulary guides which we use for every unit of studies, particularly in S1 and S2, first and second year. And I thought we have very few listening resources that pupils can access at home. So I thought, why don't I I'd create a listening resource out of these vocabulary guides. And it was just a simple matter of getting the vocabulary guide, recording it via the computer, and posting it to this blog that I created, which I ended up calling the Gordon School's Modern Foreign Languages Homework Blog. Because the idea is it gives the students the resources they might need and might want to help them with the homework.
So it's distance learning in practice, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the idea, because we can't give them cassettes the cassettes like you get with the textbooks and things like that. So I thought, well, why not just record the vocabulary and give it to them?
Yeah, that's an excellent idea. And how did you come up with that idea? I mean, I don't think that'd be maybe a lot of teachers that would think, oh, I'll record myself, you know, on my computer and then put it up on a blog so my students can download it. It's a really interesting idea. Where did that come from?
The idea for that podcast, it was like an agglomeration of things that reading other people's blogs, seeing what other people are doing. I don't know, it wasn't something I consciously thought about. I just thought, oh, I'll try this and see what happens and see what it sounds like, see what a reaction it gets. And it's had quite a favourable reaction, not only from people such as yourself who look at other folks' blogs and comment on them, but also from students and other members of staff at school.
Sure. And the vocab guides, you have some written support for that as well, which you put up on the blog. It wasn't just starting from scratch, was it? Is that as part of your department, you created some vocab guides, and then you basically made it, if you like, an audio version of that. Is that right?
Yeah, it was as simple as that. I mean, there's an awful lot of work gone into creating these vocab guides. We've not just like copied the vocab from the textbooks. The teachers that produce them have sort of gone beyond what's in the textbook and thought about what else we teach in the classroom at the same time, you know, the extra bits of vocabulary that come in. In association with that, we also produced exercise booklets. And then it was just recently I got hold of the sort of soft copy versions of them all and was able to post those onto the web as well, mainly as a backup for our S4 students who are going to be doing the standard grades this year, because they've probably lost all the vocab guides somewhere. So I thought I'll put them back up rather than printing them all off again. You know, I'll put them all up on the blog so that they can print them off at home on their own.
And all these resources are absolutely free, aren't they?
Yeah, oh, yes. Yeah, anybody can download.
That's brilliant. Okay, that's absolutely brilliant. Now, what's the reaction been from the students at your school for these sort of things that you're doing on your blog?
Well, there's been some really positive reaction to them. I mean, I particularly remember one quote from one of my first year students who just said, it's been fantastic using it to revise, which is exactly what it was there for, and it's done what it says on the tin, so to speak. And if a student is taking the time to go online and say that, to me, that just sums it all up, that it's been worthwhile, even just one student saying.
No, that's great. I mean, they're obviously motivated to listen to the podcast that you're making. But I think particularly running up to a test, maybe that's the incentive that they need, because it just gives them a bit of extra practice, and then they can do better. I mean, have you got any tangible evidence of your pupils doing better once you've started your podcast? Have you got a gut reaction that they're improving their results because of the fact that they're getting extra listening practice?
I haven't got anything tangible, because I've not sat down and sort of looked into the results previous to this and after this yet. But you do get the feeling, because the kids talk about it in classroom. They say, oh, is this on the blog? Is that on the blog? You know, and so they know it's there and they know it exists and they're thinking about it, you know. So once that idea sinks in, particularly with the first years, because I'm really trying to work this kind of stuff with the first years to sink this idea in, then it'll hopefully become second nature as they go through school.
And how many podcasts have you made so far for the homework blog?
Right, first and second year, we've done two units in French, two units in German, so 1, 2, 3, 4 podcasts for that, and two podcasts in third year as well. And then I think one of my other colleagues produced one as well in third year. So, you know, 6 or 7 so far.
And how long does each podcast take to prepare approximately?
The podcast itself doesn't take very long at all. Probably looking about an hour or so, half an hour to record it, and then maybe an hour or so to put all the nice bleeps and tweaks and bits of music on and stuff like that, just to make it sound interesting.
And where do you get the music from for the podcast?
It's all contained in this magnificent Apple laptop that I use.
I was going to say, what sort of kit do you use to make the podcast, as in the computer and then the microphone and the software that you use?
All right, it's an Apple PowerBook G4. I'd never used Apple before until I got hold of this from school, and I probably will never go over to anything else now. It just seems so simple. And within this, you have the program called GarageBand, which was originally set up as a music recording program. But then in the GarageBand 3, they included bits about, you know, more specific to podcast recording. So I use that, and within that you've got all kinds of copyright-free music, which you can put on to record your podcast. But it just does everything automatically. It really is. I think it's almost like radio show production software. For example, if you record your voice and then you're putting some music on underneath, it automatically ducks the music to a level that it doesn't overpower the voice and things like that. So you don't have to do any of that yourself. It's just automatic. To produce the actual recording, I use a Griffin iMic, which is a USB connection to your computer, which gives you a microphone input and an output socket, just a little piece of kit that does this thing magically. And I connect that up to it's a Sennheiser condenser mic at the moment. Proper industry standard microphone, not just a microphone specially made for the computer. Because the beauty of this Griffin iMic, it links up with a Griffin mic cable, which has an XLR connection on the end of it. You know, a proper microphone, 3-pin microphone connection. So you get that real high quality sound.
That's brilliant. Absolutely. I'm sure that the people listening to this will find that really interesting, because you know, they might be inspired to make their own vocab guides in that way. Now, in the vocab guides that you've made so far, how do you structure them? Do you have, for example, you know, a bit of grammar, a bit of vocab, conversation? How does it all pan out?
We produce them based on the textbook that we're using at the time, and basically the vocab guide follows the unit through the textbook. And then after that, we quite often put some grammar in, particularly the latest one we got for S2, which comes from the textbook we've been using is Metro 2. We're just starting to cover the past tense, so we put an awful lot of verb information, like verb paradigms and all that kind of stuff in the vocabulary guide, extra to the vocabulary guide from the textbook. And then, as I said, we've produced exercise booklets that go hand in hand with those, which basically test all the vocabulary that's covered as well.
And in the vocab guide, you use English and French or German, don't you? But when you're actually describing the vocab, you just do the French, don't you, or the German? Why is that, just out of interest?
I sort of came up with the concept of these podcasts to run hand in hand with the vocabulary guide, and I anticipated that a student wouldn't simply be sitting listening to the vocab guides with no written reinforcement. I was anticipating that they would be maybe listening to the words and revising and using the vocab guide to, you know, to help them test themselves with the, you know, they could cover up the English or cover up the French and work it that way. But I mean, obviously these things can change, you know. I'm not sure whether I would want to put the English in, to be honest, because I want them as a pure listening resource for the target language.
And to improve their pronunciation as well.
Oh, yes, but I mean, particularly to improve the pronunciation.
And also, now that you put the vocab guides, the Word documents up on the blog, it means that the students can download them anyway, even if they can't get hold of the one that you gave them as a hard copy.
Well, that's it. And also, anybody else out there who wants to feels like downloading it, or think that the resource is something for them, then they can do so as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Now, can we just go back to the first blog that you created? Because you put lots of interesting things on there, haven't you? For example, you had a trip to Strasbourg, is that right? And you wrote a bit about that on the blog, and also a cultural extra event as well. Could you just tell us a little bit about what you put on the first Gordon Schools blog?
I think the very first thing I put on the blog, and the very thing I wanted to blog, was the fact that we hosted Institut Français Rencontre Théâtrale, which is a series of competitions that the Institut Français in Scotland runs for as a French drama competition. Last year was the first year that we appeared in it, and we're appearing in it again this year, and we're actually hosting it. So I tried to do a wee podcast of that. It didn't really come off very well because I didn't know what I was doing at the time. And then the Strasbourg trip, which is our annual trip to Strasbourg and Paris, and we tried to get the kids in a group every night to write a post and then blog it, basically. It was a bit difficult because there was only one sort of clunky internet machine in the hostel, and you had to buy a card for it, and it only lasted 15 minutes, so it was quite expensive to actually blog that. But I'm trying to work out how to do this better this year, when hopefully we can do a bit of mobile blogging or something like that, so we just want to see how that goes. And then the cultural extra thing was a day that myself and an International Links Committee at school organised, where we brought in people from a company called Multi-Ethnic Aberdeen Limited, and they came in and just basically had a day with one year group in school, and we had African dancing, Thai dancing, rap writing, and they just danced and cooked and wrote rap things all day. It was absolutely superb.
I bet I got a lot out of that.
Oh, it was fantastic. It really was so good that we're trying to do it again this year, even if we can't get support from the council.
Now, also on the blog, you've put a really interesting little film in French and in German for a tourist guide, haven't you? Could you tell us a bit about that?
This is before I went to Communicator 6. I've been wanting to to make a film, which is linked to the topic we were doing my second year. It just never came off. Number one, I had no idea how to go about it, and number two, didn't have the time, and it was horrible weather, so I couldn't do it. When we came to sort of summertime, and the fourth years went off an exam leave, lots of spare time. So I just used the ideas that I got from the Communicate 06 conference, got the kids to work on what they wanted to do in the film. It all came from them. It was 2 weeks in the classroom with very little input from me, and the kids just working on what they wanted to do. And then we got the time, and I just took them out in the little groups. They told me where they wanted to film, so we went out around Huntley and filmed all over the place around Huntley, and they absolutely loved it. And I had a good last as well doing that. But they still talk to me about it, and now they wish they could do another film and things like that. So.
And what sort of kit did you use for that? Did you use your Apple Mac to edit everything, or what software did you use?
Yeah, it was just the Apple program called iMovie, which is just digital film editing software. It's quite a professional quality stuff, actually. Lots of people in the media industry will use this kind of thing.
So. And for the camera as well, what camera did you use?
Oh, it's just a bog standard digital camera, the kind of thing you buy in Curtiss or Argos or whatever, nothing special.
And I thought it was really interesting on the film, the way that you added subtitles. Was that something that you did within iMovie, and why did you do that?
Sometimes because we didn't have a throat micro for the speakers, so sometimes you couldn't actually hear what they wanted to say, but because it was quite a rush job, so sometimes I didn't really have the time to work on the students' pronunciation, so sometimes the pronunciation was a bit dodgy, so I wanted folk to understand, but also just an added little thing for the film, really.
And did it take a lot of time to edit it? Did you do all the editing yourself, or did you get the pupils to edit it?
Well, I did the editing myself, mainly because I wanted to learn how to do it. It probably took half a Saturday or something like that to edit each small one. Well, I kept messing things up and having to go back and things like that, just learning how to do it, but I'm quite good at it now.
That's excellent. Now, let's go on to the third blog that you've set up, which is called Rate My Mates. What's that all about?
That's a blog that I set up with one sole purpose, which is for pupils to assess their mate's performance. It's based on the assessment is for learning principle of two stars and a wish, but I thought that was a bit twee, so I came up with Rate My Mates, and it's basically post in whatever form, audio or written form, post examples of students' work, and then what I've done, I've given as homework to everybody in the class, I've asked them to listen to or read one or two of the mates' pieces of work and comment on it to get them to think about their own work. What makes this a good piece of work? Where could improvements be made? And what I've said, it's basically, as a two stars in a wish, you've got to say two good things and one thing that could be improved, just to get them thinking critically about others' work and through that thinking critically about their own work.
Have you had any problems with pupils who maybe don't have internet access at home?
Some pupils have said that, but I've said they can come into my room at lunchtime and I'll show them how to download and listen to it. Or what I've even done is, when they've not had that, I've actually burned the audio, the copies, onto a CD or something like that, so they've got the speaking things to listen to. It's all speaking things at the moment, and then basically they've come into my room again and posted it in school, so I've always given them the opportunity to do so.
I think that's very important. That's great. When you've recorded the pupils, have you used your microphone and your laptop, or have you used any sort of mobile MP3 player?
It's mainly the laptop with a microphone, but a couple of times in class we've recorded things with mobiles. I think I've got a post on the homework blog which is like three vital verbs, avoir, être and aller, which we recorded as a class chanting on my mobile phone, so sometimes I've used those as well.
And have you used any sort of other mobile player, like an MP3 player?
I've set up an internet radio show in the school as well, and for some of the field recordings that we've done with that, we've got my aunt's PDM660. It's a solid state digital recorder, the kind of things that radio presenters use when they're out doing interviews, so I've used that as well.
So the radio show blog, that was blog number four, is that right?
Yeah, that's number four, yeah.
Okay, and where did you get the idea for that one?
I think it's something I read about on blogs. It was John Johnson from Radio Sandy, that was it. I just thought it was an absolutely superb idea, not only to promote the things that a school does, but also to get students involved in something that they might not get opportunities to, like producing radio shows, thinking about script writing, having creative ideas and putting them into action and putting them and broadcasting them to the world.
Now, how do you actually put the show together? How long does it take? Do you put, say, one programme together a week or once a month, or how does that work?
We have one lunchtime a week, Thursday lunchtime, which is Radio Club lunchtime, and sometimes we brainstorm ideas, what we want to do. I actively encourage the kids to come with ideas, but if not, I've usually got some in the back of my mind anyway for radio shows. And it probably takes at the moment 2 or 3 weeks to put together a show with maybe 2 or 3 different items in. When we come to around the deadline for when we want to publish it, we might be getting folk in every week, every lunchtime, to do little bits of recording here and there. I've got an engineer who's one of our senior students who in his spare time is an Apple developer, so he knows his way around this laptop more than I do, so he does most of the editing for the radio show.
What sort of content do the pupils come up with?
It depends on their interests, actually. We've got an entertainment correspondent. It's a girl who's big into a rock music and stuff like that. So she's done reviews of concerts and things like that. I've got one of my younger students who's she's an avid book reader. So she's now our book reviewer. We've got a young lad who does regular football reports on Huntley FC. And then quite often it's things what are going on in school. For example, I took a group of senior students to an HIV AIDS conference in Glasgow, and we recorded an interview with some of the Malawian peer educators that were there, and then students from the school came up with ideas what they wanted to do for the rest of the show based on the theme of HIV AIDS. So quite often it comes from them.
That's great. Now, the radio show that you've done for the fourth blog, that's in English, isn't it? But you have done radio shows in French and in German for the homework blog, is that right?
That's right. Those are ideas. We try, you know, you come to the end of unit assessment, you know, listening, reading, speaking, writing, or something like that. The speaking and writing assessments, it tends to be so dry. So I thought, what can we do to make it more interesting and really hopefully encourage the kids to produce the best German or the best French that they possibly can? So I thought, try and do a radio show. Everybody has to create, everybody has to write something, everybody has to speak something, and hopefully the fact that they know it's going to be published to a possible worldwide audience, it'll encourage them to produce the best possible French that they can. I think it really worked. The kids really enjoyed it for a week and a half in the classroom, again with very, very little input from me, except right at the beginning when I was saying them what I want them to produce and how they can go about it and just giving them advice on the production. They sat down in the groups and really worked hard to produce an excellent piece of work. I mean, I'd kind of fixed it a little bit because they weren't in the friendship groups, so I ensured that there were at least one or two really strong students in each group. But I also gave them the responsibility of being the producer. You know, they were responsible for what was going out, in essence, which was also, I suppose it's a bit of differentiation in a sense, you know, giving them the motivation of power to make sure that everybody else is working as well. But, I mean, I didn't say to everybody, you must be able to speak for a minute or 2 minutes in French. They were left up to their own devices what they wanted to say. I just tried to ensure that you know, they were producing excellent French and excellent German for however long they were speaking. They really enjoyed it, and then the homework after that was to comment on the work as well. But as I said earlier in the conversation, this week we've been very disrupted with the snow. We've been collapsing classes left, right and centre. And this week, our second year, there was probably 20 students in, all made up from three different classes. So I set them a target. I said, right, we've got one lesson, produce a radio show, we'll record it and we'll put it out in the same lesson. And we did. We've got 8 radio shows, which I put out yesterday. It's absolutely fantastic.
Brilliant. And how does all this work fit in with your scheme of work? Do you have to go off on a tangent in a way? And how does your head of department think about the sort of, if you like, content-driven work that you're doing?
Oh, he's super. He's so supportive on it. He's the same idea. As long as they're producing something in French, as long as they're producing something in German, as long as they're enjoying themselves, and especially in their S1 and S2, that's the main thing. Okay, we might not finish the whole scheme of work. We might not finish the whole unit in time by the end of the session and stuff like that, but that's not the be-all and end-all. That's not. We're looking for kids who can communicate and express themselves in a foreign language.
And really engage with their work as well, I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're ever to visit our corridor, my head of department, Brian, would agree with me that you would see happy kids working away happily in French and German.
Oh, brilliant. Excellent. Now, the impression that I get from the sort of work that you've been doing in the last year or so is it's very much to do with the idea of using technology to create content as opposed to revise, reinforce. You know, you're making lots of things. You're making podcasts with the pupils. You're getting them to blog. You're getting them to create videos. And that's really interesting because I think that maybe in England, what people tend to use ICT for in language learning is take them into the computer room, get them to revise activities, get them to do gap-fill activities, interactive activities, things like that, which is I think is absolutely excellent that they're doing that, or they're in a whole class situation using the interactive whiteboard. But what you're doing is you're really getting the pupils to create things using the ICT, and that's really interesting and really creative and really really motivating, I'm sure. What are your opinions on that? Do you think it's because of the situation, the tech that you've got at the school that you're using it that way? It just seems very imaginative to me.
I look at it, we're all speakers of a language, whatever language it is. And learning a language should be about communicating in that language, not just being able to read passages. Obviously, that's vital as well. But kids these days are using communication technology. They're far more advanced than most adults in what they can use and what they can do. In a sense, it's Ewan McIntosh who kind of, I thought about it, but he put it more into concrete terms at Communicate 06. He says, we should, as teachers, be accessing the same sort of technology and using the same sort of technology that our kids are using at home to enable them to engage engage in what we're teaching, because unfortunately less and less kids are reading books and things like that, but they're accessing the web, they're accessing things on the internet. So if we can do things within that medium, maybe then they will be more engaged in learning a language than they have been previously.
I think that's a brilliant answer. That's great. What you said earlier, you mentioned Web 2.0, didn't you? For those people that don't know what Web 2.0 is, could you just briefly explain what that means?
I'm not fully sure, because I just pick these things up from reading blogs, and I kind of assume I think I know what it is. It's things like MySpace, Bebo, YouTube, Wikispaces. Basically, where the web user is not merely accessing information, but the web user is, in a sense, in control of that information, because they're able to upload and download, and it's a two-way process. Whereas before, I think, previously, everybody's web page and thought, oh, that's a load of rubbish, I wish I could change that. Whereas now, in a lot of things, you can, for example, I mean, Wikipedia is the perfect example, an encyclopedia based on contributions from its readers. And I'm trying to discover what Wikispaces can do for me at the moment as well.
That's your new project, is it?
That's another project, yeah.
And what sort of advice would you give to language teachers listening to this who maybe are interested in copying your ideas, in creating their own podcast? I mean, the impression that I get from what you're saying, Adam, is that you just sort of muddle your way through, you just go for it and just, you know, work things out for yourself, which I think is wonderful. Yeah. Is that what you'd say to other teachers?
Seriously, yes. Really, except for that one conference, Communicate or Six. Most conferences and things like that where we go to supposedly learn something, you almost invariably come away disappointed, because quite often you get some conferences which are just promotion for some kind of specialised software or something like that, a company who wants to promote something, and you don't get hands-on experience, and even if you do get hands-on experience, it's too expensive for your school to afford, so you never use it again. So it's basically a question of getting hold of what you can get hold of, spend the time looking at it, working it out. It probably took about 3-4 months for me to work out how to record something properly in a podcast, just an hour or so, an evening here and there and whatnot. I mean, I'm very hands-on learner. If somebody gives me a typed-up guide as how to blog, I won't read it. I'll log on, I'll look at the tabs, I'll look at the things and say, how do I do this, how do I do that? But I think my main tip to somebody who wants to get into this is know what you want to get out of it and keep things simple. Don't go in, for example, if you want to produce a film, you're never going to produce something of Spielberg standard. But if you can get your kids to produce like good target language, and if you have an idea of the sort of images you want to put onto film, then that's a start. For your podcast, have an idea what your students should be able to get out of it. Don't be unrealistic about their expectations. Stretch the more stronger ones, but maybe the weaker ones, only expect them to produce a sentence, but as long as that sentence is good, and then show them how it can be broadcast, and then hopefully get other kids maybe to comment on it, even from another class, get them to listen to it and comment on it. Really increases the confidence of your learners as well, for them to know that somebody else is listening to what they've done.
I think that's great. Now, I know that we've had a bit of a laugh about the fact you've got 4 blogs now, but what I like about the blogs that you've set up is their purpose is absolutely clear, that you know that you've got your school blog, that's obviously for things that you're doing in school, for events, for trips, things like that. You've got your homework blog where all the documents are, the audio files, things like that. You've got your Rate My Mates for your assessment is for learning, and you've got your radio show blog as well. So I think you've sorted it out and organized it really well, and it's all, every blog has got a clear purpose, which I think works very well. Have you found that the pupils that's benefited the pupils, that they know exactly which blog to go to?
I'm not sure, actually. Sometimes I think it maybe would be easier if I just had one, but then I think that one would get so complicated that students would not necessarily be able to access it. Because I find at the moment, I have to say, right, you'll find the work on Rate My Mates blog, and then one of them will say, oh, I don't have that address. Or I'll just say, oh, you'll find it on the TGS2 blog or something. So, I don't know, I'm part between a rock and a hard place, really. I do think a blog should have a specific purpose, and that's why I've got 4 blogs on the go, so to speak. But I think the students might get a little bit confused at times, unless they're specifically directed towards it.
Now, you've mentioned Communicate 06 a couple of times, haven't you? Now, yeah. The Communicate 07, that's going to be taking place in March, and I believe that you're actually going to be talking yourself at the conference about your experiences. Is that right?
Yeah, we'd be worried about that one.
Well, maybe this interview is a sort of preparation for that.
Oh, no, it's because I've been thinking about this interview for last week, so it's kind of to help me jot some notes down about the sort of thing I want to do in my presentation. But I don't know what kind of presentation to do, whether it's going to be all singing, all dancing, or whether I'm just going to chat and show examples. I'm not really sort of decided that yet.
And how did it come about? Did Ewan just contact you and said, would you like to speak? Or was it because people have been looking at your blogs? Or how were you actually asked?
It was Robert McKinstry who's there. He's not the head of SILT, the Scottish SILT. He's very high up in it. He contacted Brian, my head of department, to find out whether we wanted to, well, to ask us if we would do a little presentation on what we've been doing. So it's not actually just me. There's a couple of other colleagues, you know, are doing some stuff with blogging as well. A Spanish teaching colleague, she's set up like a class blog for her classes, which is going quite well as well.
Oh, very good. Do you think that Scottish SILT, the MFLE and Partners in Excellence, do you think that they have been the driving force behind all the blogging and podcasting activity, particularly in language learning, that's been happening in Scotland?
Oh, definitely. I think, to be perfectly honest, a lot of it does come down to one fella, this Ewan McIntosh. Him being a modern languages teacher has helped the promotion of modern languages in Scotland enormously. And his sort of grasp and knowledge and expertise in modern technology and things has really pushed it. And through him, a lot of these modern languages blogs exist, you know, because he set up the Typepad account and whatnot. But I think the modern foreign languages environment is a superb resource as well for language teachers. I mean, we're lucky, the forum section of that is really good as well. You can get some great advice on that. But just the website itself, I mean, any teacher can access it anyway. They can't go into the forums if they're not in Scotland, I don't think, but just the resources in general that are available are fantastic.
And in England, what do you think we need to do to get the same sort of number of people? I think it's like 300, 400 people in Scotland who are blogging, not just language teachers. I mean, I found about, I don't know, 30 blogs from language teachers in Scotland. What do you think we need to do in England to get the same situation happening?
It's possibly making teachers more aware of the use of blogs for their teaching. These things have been promoted for the last 2 years now, I think, in Scotland, in the Language Teachers Conference at SALT, the Scottish Association of Language Teachers, and things like that. But I think that the main thing that is politicians down in England are getting far too involved in the teaching of modern languages and getting on my high horse now.
Go for it.
They don't know the reality of the situation. And when you got one politician saying, we're going to take languages out of the curriculum as such, as it's going to be an option. And then another politician saying, well, it needs to be brought back in. They're not exactly reading from the same book. And students don't know what to do. Parents don't know what to do. I mean, we're also bogged down by this idea of English being all important as well. But it's difficult to resolve, really, isn't it?
And so do you think that using technology, for example, in England, that should make a big, big difference, particularly in relation to blogging and podcasting? Do you think that the sort of creativity and motivation that we seem to be seeing in Scotland can happen in England as well? Not to say that English language teachers aren't motivated, but the motivation that I've seen myself in the last year or so from teachers when I'm showing them how to blog and podcast has been really good. And I think that we have a lot to learn from what's happening in Scotland, not just at secondary, but also at primary level as well. And I think that, you know, we do need to put some sort of strategy in place, be it SILT or the Specialist Schools and Academies Trust or the Association of Language Learning. We need to put something in place so that we can train teachers on a national level, so we can engage pupils possibly in ways that we wouldn't have thought of otherwise. And I think, you know, in relation to what you just said about the government's decision on or various decisions on languages in the last couple of years has had a major effect on language teaching, on the morale of language teachers, and as you say, on pupils not really knowing what's going on. What do you think?
As long as the technology is used with an end to, you know, to increasing the enjoyment of learners, then it can only have great benefits in a sense. I mean, if it's one of these things, if money's thrown at it and then it's just said, oh, we have to spend money, let's spend it on this, then it's not going to work. Like how often, I think, was it on your blog about the use of whiteboards?
Yeah, it was. There was a big discussion on the LinguaNet forum about that. It was very interesting, yeah.
You know, whiteboards are a fantastic resource, but how often are they used to their full potential in not only in language classrooms, but in any classrooms? Are they just quite often used as a whiteboard, you know, to show a video or something like that? Or are they actually used interactively? So all this technology is fantastic if it's used in a way that engages learners as well.
No, definitely. It's training, isn't it? It's training and lots of examples, I think. That's what teachers need.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, once again, teachers, you know, it's almost expected of us that every single teacher goes home and does more work at home. I mean, a lot of it comes down to teachers' interest. If a teacher doesn't find podcasting interesting, they're not going to produce a great resource from it or use it in a great way, but they'll have other ways which are going to produce fantastic lessons.
No, definitely. And I think that's particularly in your example, what's really interesting is the fact that you haven't maybe got the same sort of kit that many, many schools might have in England or in Scotland as well, but you're still using technology in a really interesting way, very much, you know, content-driven, just with a laptop, a microphone, and lots of creativity. And I think that's absolutely wonderful. What are your future plans now, Adam? Do you want to do, you know, blog number 5, or what do you think?
It's wikis at the moment.
Right, okay. That's your new thing, is it?
That's my latest thing. I've set my third year French class a task to get them to write excellent French online via UPA, to discover another part of the world, namely Western Africa, where French is widely spoken, and also to discover a new technology, i.e. the Wikispace technology.
For those people that don't know what a wiki is, though, Adam, can you just briefly explain what it is?
Essentially, it's an editable web page. If you know what the Wikipedia is, Wikipedia is an online encyclopedia which is edited by its own readers. So a Wikispace is a web page that anybody can set up. For example, I've set mine up, as I was explaining, the project is for my students to write an account of a journey to Western Africa in French. Now, each student can add on to the bit that a student has previously done. If they see a glaring error, they can also edit somebody else's piece of work. But the beauty of it is, the wiki I've set up, it's a private wiki, so only members can do the editing. But I can also check who's edited what, because every time something is edited, it takes a snapshot of before and afterwards, so I can see what's been edited and where it's been edited and when it has been edited, who it was edited by. I think the idea is great for language teachers, especially for practicing writing. So I'm just waiting to see how it turns out.
And is there a risk that pupils can go in and delete other people's work, or can you always go back to a previous time?
That's obviously a risk, and to be quite honest, I don't know the answer to that because I'm only discovering it myself. I know it takes snapshots of previous work, so I don't know how I'll deal with that. I think it's like an evolving learning experience for me at the moment, because the kids keep coming in asking me questions about it, and then I have to go away and find out. There's probably one thing where I'd ask the class I'm on the and say, well, just concentrate on writing your own bit rather than editing anybody else.
It's been wonderful talking to you, Adam. I think that the work that you're doing is genuinely inspirational. I think it's really, really interesting. It's the best example I know of student-centered blogging and podcasting. It's really wonderful, and it's been great talking to you. I've been wanting to talk to you for a long, long time now. So I'm delighted that we've been able to chat about all the wonderful things that you're doing, and I wish you all the best, particularly with your Communicate.07 conference appearance in a couple of weeks' time. So thanks again.
Thanks very much. No, thank you. Thank you.